News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton. 807 Mobile Mornings. Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com, the Advocate in New Orleans, and the New Orleans newspapers as well, joins us. Quinn, before we get into a number of items in the news, do the Saints have any shot at any sort of success this year with their current collection of quarterbacks?
Oh, yes, they do. I think Tyler Shuck has real upside. Now, you know, will he be able to realize that whole upside in his rookie year? I don't know. I'm more worried about their lack of talented depth at wide receiver and at tight end, and their lack of depth at offensive line and their pass rush. I'm worried more about all those things than I am about the quarterback, frankly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of these dudes are getting up there in age. I mean, Kamara, I wonder how many good years you got left out of him. Cam Jordan still getting it done on the defensive side.
Yeah, time's
Davis.
Ticking.
Yeah, but how are they feeling in New Orleans? Feel like the NFC South is maybe in range this year? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, nobody really knows how this coaching staff will work. Even though the score didn't look good in the first preseason game, I think most fans saw some real good signs, especially from the defense, not as much from the offense. But there's, you know, there's sort of cautious optimism that we might at least be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there's certainly not a lot of downerism. There's not a lot of pessimism, but there's not the optimism that usually greets or that used to greet it during the Sean Payton era.
Okay.
Well, one team, Washington, the Commanders, for now, they might be the Redskins again very soon. Who knows? Maybe Trump will head on down to the sideline and coach a few series. He's got the feds taking over D.C.
Yeah.
He's been making some comments about the football team as well. What'd you make of this Trump plan? He had the presser yesterday and said, you know, D.C.'s crime is out of control. You're going to put him under the police department. So basically he's saying that federal assets will be there to assist, but it will be the police department under federal control making arrests for about 30 days unless Congress extends that via a joint resolution.
Before I answer that, I do have to say there was a time when a president called a play for the Redskins. Richard Nixon asked George Allen to call a play for the Redskins, and it lost something like 13 yards.
It lost 13 yards?
It was 12 or 13 or 15 or something like that, but it was a big loser. It was a double reverse or something, and
it
didn't work.
little did Nixon know that was going to pretty much signify what his career was about to become with Watergate.
Exactly.
That was a 13-yard loss for sure, if not more.
So that's why you want to be very careful when a president gets involved. Look, the crime statistics nationally are down, and they're also down from their highs in D.C. But, you know, and Trump is wrong to say, well, the statistics aren't real. But that said, the president of the United States has every right, notice this as I'm sticking up for Trump here, has every right to do what he is doing in the District of Columbia. It is constitutionally a federal city. The federal government may, of its own will, give powers to the locals, but the ultimate authority of the power in Washington, D.C., always, always, always resides in the federal government. And law enforcement is an executive function, and that means the president has every right to do what he's doing. And, you know, if I were a resident of D.C., I would say, well, if you can help us keep crime in check, please do. So all of the caterwauling, all of the complaining out of the liberal, white and black elements in Washington, D.C., all those swells up in Georgetown that are out there protesting, they're protesting the wrong thing. Trump is right on this
one. And would you say, I think he keeps, I don't know if tricking is the right word, but Democrats keep ending up on the wrong side of these debates, because more or less, whether you see it with deportations or with what's going on in D.C. now, you have your Gavin Newsom's and Hillary Clinton's getting out there and basically, you know, victimizing the bad people that Trump says he's going after. And I think politically it keeps end up being a loser for the liberals, who are like, well, you don't need to stop the crime in D.C. Well, you got a lot of people in D.C. who feel differently than that.
Well, unfortunately, there are too many people in D.C. that don't feel differently, because it's such, I mean, even the you know, wealthy elements in D.C. tend to be these limousine liberal types. But there are people in D.C. who want to see their crime rate come down and will be welcoming this. I think they're sort of scared into silence right now. Either way, it is the right thing to do. You also have lots and lots of people that come in from suburban Maryland and suburban Virginia and work in Washington, D.C. every single day, and they have just as much right as everybody else to expect to be able to walk out to lunch without worrying about crime. Mm-hmm. And so, look, I don't know whether the means that Trump is choosing are the best means. I haven't even looked at it. The point is, he does have that authority, and he is exercising that authority in a constitutional manner.
Quinn, you know that city pretty well, you know, much more than I do, for sure. What kind of an effect could Trump's federal intervention have on that city in just a 30-day period?
I don't know how much it can have in a 30-day period, but I can tell you, Washington, D.C. in the 80s was a lot more dangerous town than it was by the end of the 1990s. What changed? The feds, under the Gingrich regime, took over a lot more control over city government. And what happened was, you had Democrat Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who was very interested in urban renewal, and he was pushing urban renewal for Washington, D.C. through buildings and stuff like that. And the Gingrich Republican Congress was interested in cracking down on crime and in trying some of Jack Kemp's empowerment zone stuff and all the rest of it. And together, they started paying attention to Washington, and because the feds started paying attention, Washington was a safer, cleaner, much more livable city in, say, the year 2000 than it was in 1982 when I got there for college. So we know that it can work. Can what Trump's doing work in 30 days? I don't know, but it's worth a shot.
And also, we're talking with Quinn Hillier. He floated the idea yesterday of maybe other major cities having the same thing happen. Now, of course, they're not the same as the District of Columbia, and maybe he was just making that threat a threat, and that was all it is. But what would that be like? I mean, I think he's already facing court, will be facing court battles over this action for D.C., but when you get to other cities, is that even legal, I guess?
No, it's not constitutional. It is flatly unconstitutional. And it's also a very, very bad precedent to set. And you've heard me say this on multiple other occasions when you talk about federal or presidential expansion of authority. And that is, we might like the goals now, but do you want a Barack Obama, Joe Biden, a Bernie Sanders, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? Do you want one of them being able to send the feds in and take over the police departments of Dallas, Salt Lake City, Pensacola, Mobile, Gulfport? No, you don't want them to have that power, because they can abuse it. There is a reason why most policing is constitutionally a local matter, and because it can, if you make it a federal matter, you get very much into the realm of what Mussolini did and what Franco did and what Pinochet did and what all these dictators do. And you do not want to give that power to a President Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
I wanted to, let me change the subject just for a second. It's still talking about, I guess, similarities, because off the air, Dan and I, and on the air, have been talking about all this redistricting discussion. It's so wild to me that Alabama has been fighting this battle in court now 4 years, just about, it seems. And another ruling on Friday where they said we won't have to go into federal preclearance, but still won't be able to redraw the maps until after the 2030 census. On the other hand, you have Texas saying they're going to redraw. That brought out California and Illinois, some places where, frankly, they're already so gerrymandered. I don't see how they squeeze another Democrat seat out of their state. But how is all of this going on at the same time that Alabama is being told, no, these are your maps and you're sticking to it?
Well, first of all, Texas, anybody is wrong unless they are ordered by a court. They are wrong to do a mid-decade redistricting. You get one shot at the apple. Now, I'm not saying there's a constitutional restriction on it, but there is clear constitutional intent and clear weight of 220 years of tradition. You do, once a decade, you do redistricting unless the courts tell you you got it wrong. But that doesn't mean that what Illinois did and what California did and what a lot of these other states did in gerrymandering for the left was right either. It's just you get one shot at the apple. The reason that Alabama is being told that is because a court found that they did it wrong and ordered a redo under a court-ordered special master. And that means that Alabama doesn't have the leeway to say, well, we want to keep changing our way because the courts have already said you blew it. Now, you've heard me say I think the courts were dead wrong, but that doesn't mean that Alabama has recourse under the law. It's just saying that, you know, even if we think the courts are wrong, the courts have spoken, and Alabama is sort of stuck with what we have until 2030.
And we're the odd man out, Jerry Carl. Looks like now he's filing. He, as it all turned out, when everything shook out, he was the guy that
lost
personally.
Yeah, but
took
the
loss.
Maybe he's got an announcement coming next week, and so maybe now that Barry Moore is running for Senate, maybe Carl is going to try to get his seat back, and he would have a pretty good chance too.
And he has officially filed. So
he's filed.
While
the
announcement hasn't officially come out, it does look like that's what he's going to do. But also, they're talking about Barry Moore's wife possibly entering that same race, and a state representative from Enterprise, Rhett Marquis, or Marquis, I'm not sure how he says his last name. So that race is kind of filling up as we start to see the Senate race fill up as well.
They might both run over there? Do you think one would kind of...
Well, you would have Barry Moore running for Senate
but,
and his wife running for this congressional seat.
I get that, but do you think that Marquis, or whatever his name is, would oppose Barry Moore's wife?
That's a good question, because they're both from that area.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
But Jerry, it looks like Jerry's going to be the guy from this corner of that new district, it appeared.
It does. And look, he came very close in that primary last time to Barry Moore. In fact, it was sort of an upset that Barry Moore won, a slight upset. Mm-hmm. I think Jerry Carlin is the favorite. People don't like the idea of, well, the husband gets to be the U.S. Senator at the same time the wife gets to be the congressman. That sort of dynasty building sort of rubs most Americans the wrong way.
Well, let's get into the mayoral race as well. We'll try to get into that as much as we can here in this next segment, because I know you have some questions for and about the candidates that you want to bring up here.
Well, yeah. And do we have time to do that now?
We're going to hit a quick break and come back for that.
We'll give you a little break and we'll get back with you. It is Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, and The Advocate in New Orleans. Seems to be a little more optimistic about the Saints than any other human being that I've talked to.
Hey, man, it's your team. You got to be optimistic.
He loves them. It's 8:21. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8:24. Mobile Mornings with Quinn Hillier on a Tuesday.
So, we're getting awfully close, 2 weeks out today from the municipal elections. Of course, one of the most watched of those will be the Mobile mayoral race. And there have been plenty of forums, a debate or two. We'll have one on Thursday, Quinn, down at the Convention Center for the Business Expo. All four candidates expected to attend that midday Mobile one. What are your thoughts? What are some of the outstanding questions you have here 2 weeks out? What do you want to know about this race?
Well, I urge people to read Rob Hulbert's most recent column on this in Lanyap. I think he hit it out of the park. Rob said he is still waiting. I am still waiting for something really creative, something substantive, and maybe new coming from somebody in the race, because so far they're all mouthing the same platitudes, except on crime, where they all say the same non-platitude. Almost all of them talk about community policing. They have slightly different takes on it, but that's about as substantive as they get. And I want to hear more. You all have said, I think I can say this, even though you all said it off air, that you thought when Spiro Chiragatis was on your show, he sounded very substantive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to know the substance. And anybody that Mayor Stimson endorses, I want to hear more from, because I think very highly of the mayor. His website, I said this last week, you go to his issues page and you click on any issue, and you want to help the infrastructure of Mobile, you click on it and it says make a donation. It doesn't actually talk about the issue.
Hmm. Has he been called out on that? Is that something he knows he needs to change, or is that kind of an under-the-radar thing he doesn't know about, you think?
I'm pretty sure he's got to know about it by now. But, you know, that's a chance. I mean, I was really hyped up when y'all said he sounded substantive. I wanted to come on the air and say, look, this is something good that Chiragatis is saying, but I don't know. Paul Prime, it should worry people that he absolutely refuses to say there needs to be serious limits on no-knock raids or pre-dawn raids. Everybody acknowledges that there are reasons to have them, but you should have to have very specific reasons and maybe court approval to do something like that, not just on your own authority, because we have seen tragedy after tragedy after tragedy with these no-knock or pre-dawn raids. Both of them can be problematic. And that's why he got in trouble and why he ended up being fired, in effect. There's something wrong. Innocent people get killed. Children get killed. Across the country, things like this has happened. And Prime won't back down on that, and he's wrong on it. I support targeted pre-dawn raids with a judge's order. You can do that order the day before, et cetera, but you've got to have some restrictions.
I wouldn't say that's the reason he got fired. I mean, that was all part of the narrative, but it was a lot more complicated than that.
Well, yeah, but that's what started it all is that there were several tragedies here in Mobile involving. I can't remember if it was no-knock or pre-dawn or both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what started the ball rolling. And then, of course, he said that, well, their investigation wasn't fair, blah, 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 whatever. The problem starts with the tragedies. And, yes, police make mistakes. And, yes, it's not, you know, I'm a big supporter of police. But you don't want to put the police in the situation to make a mistake by accident. And you got to have some restrictions.
Quinn, just with a minute and a half left, really, I know you've also brought up blight, just like Rob has. Have you felt any candidates have talked about that enough or liked any of their plans?
No, I haven't still. I haven't heard enough. I've heard platitudes. And they did get a question on that from Peter Albrecht, bless his heart, the other day. They all said, oh, yeah, we need to attack it. Well, how? I want to hear specifics, and I think most voters do, and I haven't heard them, enough of them yet.
Okay. I don't, you know, I think crime's the issue, obviously. That's the one that everybody's talking about. That's obviously the one that they're focusing on because...
Well, give me some specifics on crime.
I got it. I got you. All right. Understood.
Yeah, and I think we've got some of those specifics. Hopefully, they'll be asked on Thursday.
Yep.
Now, whether they're answered or not, that's not for me to decide. We'll see once the candidates actually get those questions and what they have to say about them. Quinn, appreciate you coming on. As always, if people want to read what you're writing, what's the best way to do that?
QuinnHillier.com or Google Quinn Hillier and NOLA, NOLA.com.
Thank you, Quinn. We'll talk in a week. It is 8, just about 8:30, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, turning up your voice.
Yeah, hit us up, 251-343-0106. That's the text line. It also works if you want to give us a call.
FM Talk 106.5, 835, 251-343-0106, text or if you want to call.
And let's hit some texts, and then I want to get into this courtroom story involving a service dog in Mobile, and also more on this Russia-Trump summit in Anchorage.
That's where it is, okay.
I'm guessing, because they haven't really come out and said it. I've seen people say, I would bet Anchorage is where it will be, and then yesterday on Special Report with Brett Baer, I don't know if he meant to say it or not, but towards the end, he's like, well, we will be there in Anchorage for this summit. And then he kind of had that look on his face like,
I wasn't supposed to say Anchorage.
Like maybe he wasn't supposed to. I don't know. Looking at the text, so Joel said the reason, let's see, everybody, I'll talk about Russia meeting with President Trump on Friday. Everybody, every day, blowing it up, and nothing's going to get done. Russia is going to keep bombing the crap out of Ukraine, and that's it. The reason Zelensky's not at the meeting because he doesn't know how to keep his mouth shut. So that's Joel on that. Texter here says, have always heard Spiro wasn't Stimson's first choice. I question giving up a judgeship where you only had 3 years to tenure. Is it a bad business decision?
Well,
I guess we'll find out if he wins the race or not.
Well, let's look at the facts as they are today. Number one, if he wasn't the first choice, and I remember we were probably the first ones to bring that up, that he had his problems with Stimson publicly 2 years ago.
Yeah, in the courtroom.
In the courtroom. I think he spoke from the bench. It was pretty unusual. At that time, I was like, whoa,
yeah,
who's this guy and what's his beef?
Because, I mean, we had such an increase in crime, just like so many cities. COVID, and I was going to bring this up with this whole D.C. federal takeover talk. Do you remember how bad things had gotten not even considering actual COVID-19, but the crime in 2021, 22, and 23? I mean, as a society, we lived through more or less the Wild West there for about 2 or 3 years. And so everybody's crime is down, but down from the peak.
Yeah, down from what? Down from ungodly numbers.
So that was all going on when we saw a lot of murders and crime in Mobile and kind of everyone pointing the finger. And I think there was a little bit of right in the way that everyone was pointing the finger. I think there were a lot of different parts at play here for why crime had gotten so bad. But I believe you had Mayor Stimson's administration kind of saying the courts were letting people out that shouldn't be let out. And then you had Spiro at the time respond and say, we're doing it by the law, by the letter of the law. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing here on the bench. So that was kind of their little tiff several years ago.
Yeah, and so as the facts as they are right now, what you do have is you've got, he does now have the endorsement of Mayor Stimson, no matter how much of a wrangled issue that was, maybe whatever. But in the end, he's got the endorsement, and he's also raised over $1 million. And that tells me that he's got the support of a lot of people, or the right people, one or the other. So this is not the same Cheerio Goddess as before either of those two things happened.
Right.
So he puts it, is it a bad business decision? Maybe it seemed a little shaky at the time that he resigned as the judge. Now I think it looks different because of the money raised, what that indicates, and also that Sandy Stimson has officially endorsed him.
Texter here says Cherry Goddess is leading with donations just follow the Greer's money, just saying. They actually include that money when they make these stories about who has raised the most money and how they've raised it. I'll need to look to see how much of it is Greer's money, but it's certainly nowhere near a majority of the $1 million he's brought in. Well, I don't think.
That's a lot of broccoli sold. $1 million. That's a lot of broccoli, period.
Sean says they should have the Putin-Trump summit on the Time Bandit from Deadliest Catch. Yeah, I was trying to figure out how we could tie Discovery Channel in on this summit. I mean, basically, Discovery and Nat Geo run Alaska, by my take, by how I see things. So if we could get the Deadliest Catch involved in this, that'd be great. I'm sure that security is the reason they're having this in Alaska. I mean, Putin doesn't have to fly over any other countries.
Yep.
He can just hit straight from Russia,
yep,
over the water and into Alaska. He'll probably fly right over the house of our former vice presidential candidate, Sarah Palin. You know, she said she could see Russia from her backyard.
She'll be the first to spot the jet.
She'll know when it's going down.
Yeah.
Also, you had Quinn saying he wants to hear Paul Prine basically disavow or put limits, not disavow, but put limits on no-knock or pre-dawn raids, and said all it would take is a judge's approval maybe the day prior. This texter says, how will a judge's approval stop a mistake as far as shootings? And as far as, you know, Prine is concerned and politically, why would you come out and put any kind of handcuffs on your own policy? I mean, people that are voting, many of them are voting for who they think will be the toughest on crime. And coming out and putting any kind of guards on how
you fight crime,
limiting yourself before you even get into office, yep, I don't think that's a very smart political move. Now, if he were to win the race and then come back and say, well, there will be some kind of limit on how and when we do these raids. But I think a big part of that and what proponents of, you know, having the having it go through the courts before these no-knock warrants are served, they're saying that it would keep certain instances from happening, like what we saw, well, a couple times during Prine's tenure, or maybe even before, where other people were there and maybe even the person they were looking for wasn't there. But I don't think that having a judge sign off on it beforehand would even help that. I mean, people move around, criminals move around a lot. And I think a lot of the times they're doing it purposefully and trying to evade by staying in different homes or different places and with people that they don't feel the police will come in and come almost, after them if they've got mamas.
Like a shield.
Yeah, almost like a shield. So I don't know. And I don't think Prine will be coming out and saying, hey, well, before you go to the voting polls, just know that.
Let me make this clear.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be happening. Maximus said, he mentioned Quinn being on. Did someone hit Quinn on the head? He agrees with Trump. Yeah. He sounds like he agrees with Trump on the takeover of D.C., which he announced yesterday. Josh says a liberal court found it wrong. Really now, talking about Alabama and redistricting. James says, and this is a common take among the liberals this morning on the text line. They say, so with the murder rate and crime in Alabama, it seems to me like Trump needs to send them here too. And that's been texted several times this morning. Paul says, sounds like a 6-10 year for the Saints.
May I add on to that, if they're lucky.
If they're lucky.
I don't know much, but
they're in a tough spot.
You got to have a quarterback to compete in that league.
And they
if they have one, we'll find out at some point. But right now, just looking at the names on the roster, they look pretty barren.
And you'd think it'd be a good year to tank for Arch Manning.
That's what I'm thinking.
But they've already said Arch isn't coming out next year. He's going to be another year at Texas, so you'd have to wait for the 27 draft. But I think I saw a Saints fan comment to that. You think we can only suck for 1 year?
Yeah, I was going to say, if anybody can be completely horrible for 2 years in a row,
it'd be the Saints.
They could pull that off.
They've done it before. And I say that as someone whose team just had the first overall pick, so I'm not expecting us to be gangbusters this year either.
You and your Titans glass house.
251-343-0106. And text's coming up a little bit slow this morning. Hey, guys, this is Billy D. I just want to say, if they start pushing for the no bail money, if they can get rid of that you have to start paying for your bail and be able to arrest 14, 15, 16-year-old thugs, I think that would make a huge difference in D.C. and everywhere else if you really want to know the truth.
I think it would.
The cashless bail thing has just never made any sense to me.
Yeah.
Other than knowing that it's liberals pushing it.
Yeah, makes,
for some
it
reason
makes sense
feel
to those on the left wanting votes.
Yeah. And then King of All Unnamed Texters talking about the DHR story this morning, where now the family of 3-year-old KJ Starks Jr. has filed a wrongful death lawsuit. That's in addition to the female who's now been identified as the driver who left the child in the car, 54-year-old Keela Stanford, who was charged criminally with leaving a child unattended in a motor vehicle. That is a Class B felony. And reading through the lawsuit's claims and kind of what's been put out there about that day, it does, at the very least, seem negligent. But King of All Unnamed Texters said, wow, sounds like that negligence was on purpose. I mean, she kept getting back in the car. That's what struck me about this latest timeline, is the way it was kind of portrayed initially, it sounded like Stanford, so she picked up the child from daycare at 9 a.m., had a meeting, scheduled visit with his biological father in Bessemer at DHR. So I guess they hold it at their office. I'm not sure. That visit ended at 11:30. After that, she was supposed to take the 3-year-old back to daycare, but then ran errands instead. So I thought she ran the errands all in one block, went home, and left the child in the car. What they're saying in this lawsuit is she stopped, got food for her family, delivered the food to her home, left KJ in the car then left her home again to go shop at what they're still calling a tobacco store.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it a tobacco store or is it a smoke shop? And I think that's a pretty big difference, too. I mean, these days, smoke shops sell a whole lot more than tobacco. Was she going to get a corncob pipe with some tobacco you pack into it? I mean, a tobacco store, that's what they say she went to. But that was the second trip out with this child in her car. Got back home at around 12:30, left him in the car, and apparently didn't realize until 5:30 when she received a call asking why the child hadn't been returned to daycare that she had left him in the vehicle.
Does it make any sense? Wait, but the texter says, it feels like she did it on purpose?
Well, said sounds like that negligence was on purpose. I think the texter, King of All Unnamed Texters, and me are wondering how, okay, we've seen plenty of people, we've seen mamas and daddies and uncles and grandparents make the mistake of leaving a child in a hot car. But she was in and out of that car multiple times. I mean, how does that happen? That's a question that I think plenty of people have about this.
Well,
and how far are they going to dive in and try to figure out, you know, how exactly all of that went down? But she's not the only one named in this lawsuit. They named Stanford, the woman, the suspect here, but also Covenant Services, who says they fired her immediately after that. And then Alabama DHR and Jefferson County DHR, multiple employees from both of those.
I have a hard time. It's easier for me to surmise that she just overlooked him twice, rather than she intentionally wanted the child to die. Who wins there? She's going to be in jail for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The child is gone. The family is devastated. Probably a lot of people are devastated from this death. So,
well, I'm not saying
unless she's like mentally ill, I don't see how.
I'm not accusing her of murder or anything like that. But to get in and out of the vehicle multiple times, rather than the one time that it kind of sounded like at the beginning. But have they drug tested her since then? I mean, what was this tobacco store she was going to? How do you let that happen? Especially if that's your one job, is to transport the child.
Yeah, obviously.
And then to not get a call from the daycare before 5:30, I mean, it sounds like all kinds of things were out of whack on this.
Out of whack, yeah. Poor execution for sure. I would have to get more evidence about the woman to think in any way that she intentionally wanted the child to die.
No, but I think if she were high on something or something like that, then that deserves greater charges than what they've currently charged her with as well.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So we'll see, and that'll be something they'll work out in court here over a while. 8:48 coming up on 49. We got more texts to get to as well, including Otto saying, when do we start the pick'em? So we've opened it up and haven't put it out on social media yet. Still trying to make sure it's easy enough for people to get in. But already, somewhere around 90 people have jumped back into the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em. If you played last year, there have been emails sent out from Run Your Pool. And it's a little confusing because Run Your Pool has merged with Splash Sports. And so when you join, It's now Splash Sports.
Uh-huh.
But when you click that link, you go in, you log in. I guess it's spitting people back out to a main page rather than after they're logged in to accept that invite to FM Talk 106.5. If you go back to your email and click on the link a second time, it should take you there. But one way I found yesterday is I logged in, I clicked on the email, went to the page to join, logged in, and then I hit My Contests on the page. And when you click My Contests, FM Talk 106.5 should show up. Click there, and it'll get you through. But you can email me if you're having some issues here, or Facebook message me if you're a friend on Facebook. My email is Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, at fmtalk1065.com. We have 2+ weeks to get everyone in, so I'm going to do my best to make sure that everyone that wants to play is able to play.
Yeah,
we'll also put this out there publicly, too. I think we can get up to at least 1,000 people playing this year.
Wow, had over 650 or so
last
year?
We had 780 playing last year, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, and a big prize announcement coming soon. It's going to be a heck of a year in college pick'em.
And Chip Ford is on the way. Good to have him back. 2 weeks away. And all over the place, too. Like every major league and minor league stadium this side of the Mississippi. No, on both sides of it. Anyway, he's been everywhere. Kansas City.
Oh, Jeff.
Texas.
Yeah.
Cincinnati.
He's seen them all.
You name it.
He has had his share of hot dogs over these last 2 weeks.
Yeah, cotton candy for the little guy.
And somehow he gets, the little guy gets a ball thrown to him at every game, it seems.
So I guess they go early, and you know the science of it all. Mm-hmm. I haven't thought about that in a long time, but you go early, you go down by, and they're not really a stickler on, you're not seated in a seat. You're just down there gawking at the players.
Yeah.
And he's cute little guy.
That's the way to get him.
He gets the ball.
They replayed Barry Bonds when he hit the all-time leading home run, I guess 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago. I can't remember how long ago it was. But
20, maybe.
And he hit it into right field there in San Francisco, and the number of people fighting over that home run ball to take it home. I forgot what things were like back then, but imagine how wild that scramble was for his record-breaking home run ball. I need to go back and see how much money they made off of that.
Well, there's not many seats in right field. There's just there's the water.
Yeah, well, the home run only went about 5-6 rows deep.
Oh, okay.
Over the rail.
All right.
So they were really scrapping it out for it.
I see. All right. So a service dog. You want to get to this real quick?
Yeah, and this is actually made national news.
Has it really?
I guess that's what happens when you have a cute dog in a story. But a service dog ordered out of a federal courtroom in Mobile. The dog's owner isn't happy with the reason he got from the judge. This is from Akivia McFarland at WKRG, who says Chris Alfrey is an Army veteran, suffers from PTSD, and trains his wife's service dog, Dewey. Said in July, they're a couple from Ohio, and they were here in Mobile. Both were testifying in an ongoing legal matter stemming from a previous vacation to the Gulf Coast. So I'm not sure what that's about. They don't go into detail.
Yeah.
They were set to testify on different days. When it was Alfrey's turn, he didn't think there would be an issue bringing Dewey, I guess, up to the stand alongside him. But the judge, Terry Moorer, acknowledged the dog as Alfrey's wife's service animal, which it appears it is, not his, and said to make arrangements for whatever needs to be done to see that the dog was removed from court. Now, I guess that day, Judge Moore allowed the dog to stay
that day,
so they
yeah.
wouldn't disrupt things. But he said, if you come back to testify, I need him out. And Alfrey, the vet, has made a big enough deal about this now that it's national news.
It says it's a service dog in training. The trainer has the right to make him... To take him into the facility under the Americans with Disabilities Act.
That's what the one lawyer is saying.
That's that's what his lawyer is.
And, I guess if that's the rule of law, I imagine these judges, and remember they made a big deal about phones in the courtroom and changing how that, what's allowed. That was months ago or maybe a year ago at this point because so many people were messing around on their phones during their court dates.
Oh, wow.
I imagine judges deal with so much BS on the day-to-day. And it sounds like, this Army veteran had a good reason to have a service dog alongside him. But again, the dog was in his wife's name. The judges probably deal with so much crap when they are in the courtroom that sometimes they make mistakes, maybe. I don't know.
Judge Moore simply said, it's my courtroom at the time. 8:59, Dan and Dalton saying goodbye, and we'll see you in the morning beginning at 6 a.m.